Thanks for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there are some elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or even unlocking their growth, that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations. So every episode, take a journey with us as we speak with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts. Whether we're in Boston, Worcester, or out in Springfield, maybe even in the Berkshires, we'll be here every week and we'll explain to you more about manufacturing and what's happening right in your own backyard.
Welcome everyone to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm your host, Haley Steele. And today I am so excited. This is a huge podcast for us. I'm going to be honest, this is my first all-female panel. So it's really, and if you didn't take the hint there when I said all-female panel, it's because it is Women's History Month. And we wanted to have some really impactful women in manufacturing join us today. So that's why we are here. We're going to talk a little bit about women in manufacturing, where they were yesterday, where we are today, and where we're headed in the future in manufacturing. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to our panel. Our first panelist with us today is Sarah Baker. She is the COO and co-founder at Silverside Detectors. So welcome, Sarah.
Hey, thanks, Haley.
You're welcome. Next, we have with us Christine Nolan. Christine is the director of the Massachusetts Center for Advanced Manufacturing at Mass Tech Collaborative. It's a mouthful there, but welcome, Christine.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Haley.
You're welcome. And last but not least, Laura, we've been on a couple of things before, so I'd like to welcome back Laura Teicher. She is the executive director at Forge. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you, Haley, and thank you for bringing us all together for what I'm sure will be a great discussion today.
Yes, right. So it was interesting when we kind of jumped on, I had asked, and some of you knew each other and you didn't know each other. And it's kind of cool how this network starts to develop, right? As we get into, we all are in manufacturing, but in our own kind of silos at some point. And so now being able to do something like this, we enjoy it because it kind of mixes us all together to get to know each other a little bit better. Before we get started and we kind of dig into women in manufacturing, I'm going to ask you a question. I'll throw this out there and anybody can answer it first. So when you were younger and as you were growing up, did you ever expect that you would be making such an impact in something like manufacturing?
I thought I was going to be a ballerina. And
Sarah, I that's gave fantastic. That up early.
Oh, yeah. But my, no, when you told me manufacturing, and this is well through college and into my first couple of jobs, I have this image of a Sesame Street segment where they're making peanut butter. And you have these massive machines with the peanuts going through and getting smashed and rivers of peanut butter going through. That, until I started this company, was my association with manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. For me, I in high school, I loved my math and sciences, and it led me to a career in or a degree in engineering out of WPI. But I don't know if I knew back then what that would mean. Yeah. And I think especially for women, your careers can take different paths. And so, you know, we all have our story to tell and of how we've gotten here. But being in manufacturing is just exciting to see what we can accomplish and what's ahead.
Yeah.
The short answer is no for me. I think one of the earliest jobs that I aspired to was to be a firefighter. I like to joke with my team that there is a firefighting component to leading a small, scrappy nonprofit. Yeah. But I actually found my way to supporting manufacturing through a career very focused on impact and on supporting innovation. So Forge specifically helps with the manufacturing of innovative products and supports startups with manufacturability. So when I landed in this role, it wasn't a surprise to anyone who knew me, because they know how passionate I am about supporting innovation, having a strong impact, and the value of actually making things. But it was a little bit of a surprise to me because, as Christine said, I've taken a little bit of a meandering path over the years.
Yeah, that's so cool. I think the takeaway from what you're saying there, Laura, is it's the passion. You know, you definitely find that I haven't talked to, you know, the three of you in depth, but just from what I know about each of you, it's definitely, that seems to stand out pretty significantly to us, especially, you know, with us at Mass MEP and what we do, and your passion about it. And we talk about it a lot. It is something that's why we wanted you to join with us today to have the three of you on here. So I kind of want to dig into a little bit about how you guys did end up where you ended up. So Laura, kind of take us down the path of Forge and how that came about to be.
Absolutely. Forge predates my engagement with Forge. And once upon a time, when it was less known, it was called Greentown Learn. So it was really born out of Greentown Labs, which is the largest climate tech incubator in North America now. And it houses today about 140 startups at a time, all focused on addressing climate. And when you're addressing the very physical, real world impacts of climate change, well, if you don't have a physical product, then you probably have AI that's somehow plugging into the grid or monitoring sea level. There's almost always a physical component, even if it's primarily an AI product. So this commonality was recognized that we're pulling together these climate-oriented startups. They all have to get stuff made. A lot of them don't have backgrounds in manufacturing, don't have connections in manufacturing. And this is part of what's going to make and break these companies with physical products, because they put so much of their upfront capital into the making of things. If they don't have guidance and the right partnerships early on, that really can be where they fall off the runway and don't quite make it to scale. So our core programming, the manufacturing initiative, was formed to address that gap, to help them get ready to manufacture, and then to connect them actually to the wealth of manufacturing in Massachusetts and the region. And Haley, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but a lot of people are surprised to hear that there are over 7,000 manufacturers in Massachusetts alone. So a lot of these companies were located not far from exactly the capacity they needed, but they had no idea to even look there. So we were formed to bridge that gap. We rebranded as Forge a couple years ago. And today we help about 200 innovative companies and startups a year to get ready to manufacture and then connect to the local supply chain.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Sarah, you have a connection to that also too, don't you?
Yes, we also predate Forge, Laura. But Silverside Detectors was at Greentown Labs for a few years. And while we were there, we used the common prototyping space to make our first prototypes. And actually, we scaled up through seven different development cycles to get to units that we sent off to the Department of Defense for some testing and deployments. Looking back, I'll never forget my co-founder taking a meter out into the space to measure air particles to make sure that there was a clean enough environment to manufacture our small little neutron detectors, which are basically nuclear bomb detectors. But having that that platform at Greentown Labs to help us figure out, okay, great, we can make some physical prototypes, but how do we start moving towards developing this for manufacturing? Greentown was an essential component of our success in that way.
Wow, that's great. So Sarah, I have to ask, how did you come up with this? Like, where does this come from? It's amazing.
Oh, it's, if you had asked me also when I was a kid, if I was going to grow up and start a company that makes nuclear bomb detectors, I'd also have laughed at you and gone back to my ballet class. I was not a great ballerina. My background is political science, and I spent five plus years doing microfinance in Asia, lived in China, worked in Afghanistan for a while, and was super excited about poverty alleviation programs and development programs in Asia. My deeper interest has always been in security, politics and security. And so after coming back to Boston for grad school, I connected with my co-founder, who's a physicist, who had been working on this technology at Boston University. And he was looking to commercialize his, they call it TRL4, Technology Readiness Level 4. So a concept that hasn't been prototyped or field tested yet. He wanted to commercialize that. And I had some business and general security background. And as I said, every company needs a generalist who can learn anything because no company has an expert for everything. So we teamed up and that was in 2013 at Mass Challenge and then hopped over to Greentown Labs. And now the technology is both, you know, working with the Department of Defense on Homeland Security and protecting ports and borders and cities. And we're investigating new directions and new applications for the neutron detector, the most interesting one being water monitoring. You can use neutron detectors to understand how much water is in soil. And so there's this awesome, we might be circling back to Greentown Labs, you never know, but turns out you can protect the world from nuclear bombs and also, you know, help people manage drought all with one detector.
Wow. That is amazing. Like it's amazing to me. It's awesome. It's awesome to hear it. So you talk about technology and Christine, that's kind of your side of this, isn't it? Like you're on that tech side. So give us a little bit about what's going on at Mass Tech Collaborative.
Sure. Responding to what Sarah said, where she was able to use a lot of the different resources available to her in the Massachusetts innovation ecosystem to move forward in commercializing and success is what we're here to support for manufacturing companies. You know, I want to make sure first also that, you know, manufacturing is tied to innovation. Like a lot of people, when they think innovate the innovation ecosystem, they don't think of all the great things that are happening in manufacturing. Right. And I think that that hurts us a little bit, right? Because what we need is we need talent in the manufacturing world. And we want to showcase that it's a really great place to work and there's a lot of innovation and cool things happening there. So that's part of what we're trying to accomplish at the Center for Advanced Manufacturing, you know, branding manufacturing as great jobs, great place to be. You should go to consider it as a career choice. We also want to make sure that for companies like Sarah's, they understand and know of all the resources, whether it be Mass MEP or through Mass Development or Mass Ventures, or, but we're pulling together all of these resources to help people succeed. Yeah. So, and then of course, supporting them, you know, there's a lot of different funding programs out there that are available that can help. And, you know, the state's a great partner for helping that, you know, succeed.
Yeah, it is one of the, it's kind of that hidden secret. We always say that we're trying to make sure that we're not that hidden secret anymore and that these, it is out here, it is available. So that's why we do this. And we want to educate and let people know that we have the resources. So it's, I mean, sitting right in front of me, it's pretty impressive what I have. So it's an awesome thing to have. So you, all of you kind of touched on it a little bit, and this was one of the big things. And, you know, going back and looking at women in manufacturing and where they were back in the day, you know, Emma Mailman, our new marketing coordinator, she had done a little research for me and looking at the numbers, I was kind of, you know, like, wow, this is pretty impressive. But, you know, 75% of the workforce in textile mills during the Industrial Revolution was women. You know, it was women. And so obviously most people, they know Rosie the Riveter, right? So they always talk about Rosie the Riveter and she's on all of those things. But, you know, there was another woman who she invented Kevlar. I didn't know a woman invented Kevlar. I was like, that's pretty impressive. Like, you know, I mean, it's a woman. And then you think about the product and you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I get it. Like they want a shield. You get it, you know, a woman, you kind of get mama bear syndrome. You shield up, right? So invented Kevlar. And then another woman that she, you know, she created manufacturing company specializing in hair products for African-American women. Who would have thought, you know, this was way back and in the days and how we've kind of come far along from where we were. But I think what we're, you know, the biggest takeaway from all of it was, and you guys kind of all hit on it a little bit, exposing women to the field at a much younger age. You know, we talked, you said, I think, you know, I think it was you, Christine, or maybe it was Laura, and you talked about STEM, you know, and getting those kids and getting younger girls involved. And you're talking about like the technology. I mean, do you all see, is that kind of, you know, is that the path that you see if you can get them into it young and get them understanding and really getting the interest in it? I mean, Sarah, maybe this is for you. You know, you were a ballerina. You did switch over at some point, you know, like, do you think that that might be the best kind of path right now?
I like the idea of a lot of different on-ramps. Manufacturing, if you think about it, is just putting components together to make a whole. And so cooking, I can manufacture a curry, putting a whole bunch of stuff together to make a whole. And so I wonder if part of getting women of any age, even like, hey, a retiree who wants to get back in and do something, is demystifying manufacturing and thinking about it as assembling components and then figuring out what kind of assembly are you skilled at? What kind of dexterity do you have? Or what kind of spatial awareness do you have? And what kind of product at the end of the day are you excited about? I think some folks really enjoy the process of whether it's modeling or whether it's, you know, doing first robotics or something. They like the process of assembling. For me, I tell you, I'm not passionate about manufacturing. I'm passionate about what our product does. And so because of that, I'm passionate about manufacturing well so that our product goes out and saves the world. But I think having a lot of on-ramps might be a really great way of engaging a broader base.
I think breaking it down too, Sarah, like you just said, and I appreciate the analogy over to cooking versus being a ballerina, because I'm much more into cooking. So.
And by the way, I do things that are not traditionally feminine too. I'm like, some of this girly girl, I've worn Kevlar. Turns out it's super duper heavy. Yeah.
But I think breaking it down to of different ways of looking at getting into these STEM degrees, because, you know, to a lot of people, and I do believe to a lot of females, the world of robotics is overwhelming to them. And for males as well, you know, but to break it down to like, wow, I really like to put this together or think in a certain way can lead you into these careers. And I think I mentioned that when, you know, I liked math and science, but I didn't know exactly what, you know, the different paths that you could go, you know, through for engineering and into these different, you know, to building a startup or, yeah, you know, being part of creating something great.
Christine has heard me say this before, agreeing with Sarah about multiple on-ramps. I really do think, you know, Massachusetts, because we're all focused in Massachusetts, has a unique positioning where it has both a really strong innovation ecosystem and a wealth of manufacturing. And I really believe that one of the things that can help attract more people in general to manufacturing jobs, because that is the challenge, is just showing people the really cool, can I say shit on this podcast?
Sure.
The really cool shit that is being made. Manufacturing isn't just shoelaces and water bottles and kind of more of the traditional things that people might think of. In fact, the growing fields of manufacturing in the region are robotics and photonics and really exciting stuff. And, you know, I have the advantage of also working with a lot of really impactful products. I think seeing that that's the type of thing you can be manufacturing at a young age can be really impactful.
Yeah. I think what's kind of cool, I'm a mom. I have three daughters, and my oldest daughter, you know, she went through a traditional high school, and at the end of it she was lost. You know, academia was kind of like, oh, is this really my thing? I don't know. And so I always say this, I wish we moved here and she was a freshman in high school, didn't know, you know, never from Massachusetts. I didn't know what it had to offer at the time. And now, you know, hindsight's 20/20, 4 years later, I'm looking at it going, geez, if I would have known more about some of this stuff, I really think she would have flourished because of these opportunities. And, you know, and now I look at her and I have one that's my youngest and I've already got it mapped out. I'm like, we've got multiple on ramps that you can take if you don't feel this way. And it's definitely, you know, do you feel like we're maybe a little bit behind in doing that kind of educating and getting that word out there about it? Or do you think we're kind of on pace? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know if we're behind, but I know that we're behind because we don't have a lot of women yet in manufacturing, right? Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of pulls too on these kids on, you know, this career choices, think right now going into computer science, right? And so I think, but that isn't for everyone either. So being able to just create awareness around these great jobs in manufacturing and changing the perception of what that means is what I think is very important. And right now the center is working on this fantastic program. It's a federally funded program called MassBridge. Mm-hmm. And it's about creating it's a state-based technician training program and a career pathway model that can show like how you can start at one entry level point and build up your career in manufacturing. And that there's all this training available to you to move you along that path. But what we need to do, we can create this program, but we need to get people aware of it and making sure that they see what this is all about. And I keep referring to this, billboard that's up on the Mass Pike with this robot, and it's a financial services company. And it says, you know, if you had invested with us, you wouldn't have to worry about these robots. And I'm like, that's the exact opposite message of what I want to send, right? You're going to see me up there like painting over it one day, you know, like this isn't true. Robots aren't stealing your jobs. You're going to work alongside them because they're really great. They're taking those menial tasks you don't want to do and give you great work. And so it really is about for every, you know, showcasing it's a great place for women too. And they have a lot of skills to really be valuable in the workforce.
Amen. Let me tell you, I'm not hiring robots anytime soon, but I'm certainly hiring skilled and meticulous assembly workers who want to pay attention to do something. What comes to mind is a friend of mine she's a seamstress and she was in costume design when the pandemic hit last March. Obviously all the theaters closed. And so she took a retraining course and is now a CNC machine operator. And that, when I think about a lot of different on-ramps, I think about there are so many skill sets that contribute to manufacturing. Laura, when you talked about all the different products that the Greentown companies are making and all the other companies are making, there's a lot of similarities in some of the processes, but there's so many different skills that are required for manufacturing, which, let's be honest, is a pretty big bucket that a lot of different products and processes are packed into. But it's exciting when I'm interviewing somebody to think, you know, what do you do in your spare time? You're a jewelry maker. Oh, actually, you'd be really good at threading wires through some of our particular, you know, readouts or something like that. I think just spreading the awareness of and the excitement about what manufacturing jobs are, and almost wandering away from that catch-all term manufacturing and talking about more precision terms could be a real invitation.
That's a really good point. Yeah. When you talk about being behind, behind what? Yeah. I know that about 30% of the 16 million people in the US working in manufacturing are women. So if you look at the population being a little over half women, I would say we're behind where I'd want to benchmark us. But I think we have an incredible opportunity in the form of COVID, because what's happened with COVID has been really, really disruptive. It's been disruptive to global manufacturing. So folks are much more aggressively looking at onshoring and reshoring as just a risk mitigation strategy. So that's going to drive jobs here from our innovators and our companies. But what we've also seen, unfortunately, as unemployment goes up, is that women are dropping out of the workforce at a much higher rate than men. So if you look at the gaps in manufacturing workforce and these women who are going to need to re-enter the workforce, I think if we move really aggressively, we have an opportunity to capture that and move the needle pretty quickly now.
Yeah. Do you feel it's almost like in listening to you talk about, and then you know, Sarah, when you said like in using precision terms, it kind of makes me think, you know, I feel like where additive manufacturing is going, or, you know, how it's progressing, it's almost like you can find something, like you're saying, it's something that you're passionate about, that you enjoy doing. It's almost being related in a certain way now in manufacturing. Like it's really is amazing to see, you know, where some of these manufacturing thoughts are going to the future, but it's kind of like all of a sudden it's opening up new doors, and new places and going, oh, I actually enjoy doing that, and opening, like you're saying, bringing open new on-ramps to have these people. And is that, you know, do you think that's something that it's just because of the natural gravitation of where we are going? Like maybe because, like Laura, like you're saying, like with the pandemic, and it's caused people to kind of shift their perspective on things. Obviously technology has a lot to do with it. But do you think that there's any of that that has any influence in it at all?
I think one of the things that'll be interesting is how can manufacturing be a pull? If somebody's looking for a job, how do they start thinking, oh, let me go see what kind of assembly, hands-on, you know, positions are available. I wonder if folks think about, you know, I need to pick up, you know, a few hours on a shift. Let me think about grocery stores and call centers and, you know, I don't know. But I think all of you actually have mentioned the great resources of the state. Our top technician that we've had for the past 6 years, we connected to through the Massachusetts Career Stops, and hiring through them, and she's a woman. Our lead technician is a woman that we hired through one of the fantastic Massachusetts resources for connecting with folks looking for employment. And so you ask a great question about how do you demystify or how do you pull people in? A lot of that's going to be on the branding, so to speak. I think, Emma, I'm speaking to you on this one. when you're posting a job, it's branding. How do you, when you're listing requirements, what vocabulary are you choosing? That's branding. And how do we do that in a way that broadens the base we're appealing to? And then how do we work with the recruiters and the career stops and the other resources to also, I'm not going to say gamify because I hate that concept, but to loosen up the way we speak about and therefore the way people necessarily think about what we're calling manufacturing jobs.
Yeah. I mean, Laura, we kind of, go ahead, Christine.
A lot of different audiences to influence with that, right? Because, you know, we don't, you know, parents, for instance, telling their children that this is a great place to be, right? And obviously getting to the students at a young age and how important that is. But, you know, we're running a lot of, we believe in branding and awareness is a big piece of solving this talent shortage that we have right now in manufacturing, and there's quite a bit of work going into it around this MassBridge program and through the center. So so watch for those new billboards.
We kind of hit on it too. I mean, Laura, we did, you know, we did that webinar a little ways. I was a couple, was that last month or the month before? It goes by so quick now, right? And we did talk a lot about, kind of this, almost like this pipeline, you know, and kind of streaming it that way and moving it forward. And I think, you know, what's really important in where we're sitting right now is it obviously, you know, having strong female leaders such as yourselves in this industry, it's extremely impactful, to, you know, Emma's on here. She's new to manufacturing, and it's a eyes wide open right now walking into this. So, but like I said, if I would have known some of these things years ago and that I know now, I definitely, as a mom of daughters, I have one that absolutely would not fit into this realm at all. It's just not her gig. But the other two, I'm all for, I've been to certain companies, I've been in certain, you know, manufacturers, and without a doubt, I would send my, I'd be like, you need to go work there. Like, you have no idea what you could accomplish in a place like that. It's a really, it's one of those things where you kind of, but we always talk about the pride and of what everybody has here in Massachusetts. And that's just the way that it is. So it's one of those things. Do you think that, you know, now I think there's a lot of shift too. So like as a parent, I have, you know, the sending kids to college, and kind of, we're kind of steering away from that now a little bit as well. And we're kind of getting into these manufacturers. Do you think that that's going to help us a little bit with what's happened and where we'll be able to, I guess I'm asking in a way of, as a parent looking at it going, what are my options? You know, I can have my child go to college, but technically they're really not going to college. They're kind of sitting at home, right? So my kids are sitting at home, they're doing school from home. Or can I send them to out somewhere, like into a manufacturer that's safe? They're doing all the right procedures and policies that they need to follow per the standards when it comes to COVID and all of that. And they can really start to get some real life experience. Do you think that kind of gives us a little bit of a leverage?
I'll speak to that one as an employer. I'd love that. I would love smart, eager, girls, boys, cats, dogs, you know, yeah, whoever, that want to earn a paycheck, and learn some skills, to come on site. I remember my first job out of college, I went to college, but my first job out, I realized I don't know how to make phone calls. I don't know how to use Excel. I sat down and I took a job that I didn't particularly love in order to build a skill set that then I took into subsequent jobs that I have loved. I could imagine somebody coming out of high school that's eager to learn, but doesn't know what they necessarily want to learn and isn't sure what they want to do with that. Going and working a manufacturing job could be an awesome way to launch. Our technician has gradually moved into some of the testing that we do. She runs the test stands and has, we joke, like moves into doing more of the science because she wants to learn that and she has the capability of doing that. Anybody with drive coming into any job will learn a lot. And that will then focus, if somebody chooses to go forward for additional formal education versus workplace education, that's really going to focus not just what am I learning, but why am I learning it? Hey, because I saw those, you know, engineers doing that process over there and I recognize I need to learn some skills before I can replicate that. Let me go get that degree so I can come back. And there's a lot of focus there. So yeah, I would love to see the four-year college experience be entered into super deliberately, and manufacturing jobs being one of the tools that people make really deliberate decisions about their futures.
I think in general, as entry level, there's so many different pathways, as I keep saying, but there's so much training available that employers are taking advantage of at the community colleges, and whether they start at the Voc Tech in manufacturing careers, there's a lot of programs out in the state community college level that people can use to build their path in manufacturing. And I think it's important that, you know, luckily we're here in the state of Massachusetts with our university system that they're so focused on these emerging areas. Such, I think we mentioned photonics earlier, and there's advanced functional fabrics, and we have these centers here in the state that the universities have built, that we have built at the universities to train our workforce at up to the PhD level using a lot of different equipment and that aren't available elsewhere. So we're setting ourselves up to continue to be, you know, most innovative state.
I was going to say something very similar to what Christine said. I think probably with the audience for this podcast, this is a little bit of preaching to the choir, but yeah, there are so many manufacturing jobs out there that pay well, And there are so many opportunities because of the state's programs to get trained on the job. So there shouldn't be the barrier of, well, there aren't jobs out there, because there are. And there shouldn't be the barrier of, I don't yet know how to use a CNC machine, because that training can happen on the job. So really, if folks are looking for a career where they get to make things, which I think is super rewarding to see that physical finished product and make a good salary, they can get into programs where they can learn on the job. So perhaps not everyone's aware of that. And I could see that being a barrier, but really you could just slide right into manufacturing in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it is pretty wide open. I think, you know, like what I'm hearing is that basically there's opportunities that are available to anyone, you know, and it doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing. They're there, they're out there. And this is right here is a great group that can give you that information to find them. And you know, they're skilled positions, and it's, you may, like you were saying, you may start at a certain level, but that it could just keep growing and growing and growing and growing from there. So it's, there's no, glass ceiling, I would say, where you're going to hit it and you kind of stop. It can just with what we've seen and how much it's changed over time, it's out there, and where it's headed. So do you, like, let's last couple minutes here, let's kind of look at, I'd like to get a little bit of perspective from each of you. I'll start with you, Laura. What do you see is going to be the most, well, what I just give me an idea of where you think manufacturing is going for women in the future.
I hope that we will see more and more women coming into manufacturing. Again, I think that we have an opportunity with a lot of women trying to get back into the workforce post-COVID. So maybe that needle can get moved really quickly. And I see them, you know, across jobs, across sectors, and, you know, hopefully engaging, especially in the growing sectors. So we mentioned advanced fabrics, photonics, robotics. I don't think we have mentioned yet, but med tech and life sciences. I think being a little bit aware of the trends, additive manufacturing, of what's growing is helpful if one's trying to chart a career in manufacturing. But I think those fields will continue to grow in the coming years, and hopefully there'll be more and more women across the board.
All right, Christine, how about for you?
Yeah, certainly what Laura stated, but you know, the world of manufacturing is changing, and it's part of the innovation ecosystem. And it is a, you know, just as people say, you know, with the innovation economy, it's a sexy place to be, right? And there's a lot of, and it's really great to see that, you know, at the youngest of ages, people are exposing their kids to these new technologies. And certainly additive or 3D manufacturing is, or 3D printing is one of those key areas. And if people can see that and embrace that as manufacturing, which it is, it's going to help to bring more and more people into it, both boys, girls. And so looking forward to seeing that generation come up and make a difference.
All right, Sarah, you're my last one.
I look forward to seeing women in managerial positions and in leaderships in manufacturing companies. I look forward not to see just more women coming in, but more women growing and getting promoted and climbing the ladder, not just in management, but also just in supervisory roles. I also look forward to the understood corollaries to manufacturing skills broadening out. So instead of just saying, hey, like, what, you know, do you tinker on engines? Do you, you know, build robots in your spare time? You know, saying, hey, what are the key skills that a CNC machine operator needs? Is it somebody in additive manufacturing needs? And understanding a broader set of play that contributes to those skills.
Yeah, it's definitely it's exciting. It's moving forward. You know, we have inside of here where we are, and we have a lot of different components at MassMEP, and we see it from all angles. So it's kind of cool to hit that. We work with, you know, educators, and we work with students, and we work with the manufacturer. So we get to see all perspectives of it. And we also get to see, you know, the where Industry 4.0 is headed as well. So it is a cool place to be. It's a great place to be, and it's definitely going to be moving forward. So, yeah. So I want to thank you, ladies, so much. I don't want to take up too much of their time. They have limited time, so it's a busy schedule to get everybody in here at the same place. But I really can't thank you enough. This is pretty awesome. I am thoroughly humbled, and it's great that to have you all as leaders out there for our industry and for what you do. It's really impressive. So hopefully we can have you guys back again. I like to use a little leverage now that since we've been doing the podcast so frequently, we have we had a top 10 last year for the first time ever. So now we tell everybody, hey, you might make the top 10. So if we have a top 10 episode, if you make the top 10, we might have to have you back for another guest spot. But I'm pretty sure we'll be seeing and hearing from the three of you definitely in the future to come. So if it's not with us, it will definitely be in some other venues as well. So thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, really. Thanks,
Emma. Yes, you're welcome. Thanks. So thanks everyone for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can always go to our website at massmep.org. So we'll see you next time, whether it's our space, your space, or cyberspace.